All right, we are back on session 5 of this Deacon course. We have journeyed through looking a little bit at what does it look like, the character, a little bit of what the deacon is going to do, and now we're going to dive a little deeper on this kind of passage that we came across where those who serve well gain an excellent standing. So let's explore that.
Yeah. There is good news. For the deacon, there's good news. Those who have served well gain an excellent standing and great assurance in their faith in Christ Jesus. That phrase, gain an excellent standing. When you think of people that you know and you grew up in a ministry household, mm-hmm. who stands out to you as somebody who says, that was...
I think this passage really exempts it so well. The people that really stand out in just, you know, my dad's ministry and all the church planting that I kind of observed is the ones that really served so faithfully. Mm-hmm. They were tested. They dealt with many difficult situations, and they continually kept that attitude and character of the servant heart and someone who, again, is strong and assured in their faith, and I love that. Those are the people that stand out. You know, I think of this one woman who she was the absolute just example of this. She would fill every need, whether it was the child, whether it was, you know, somebody dealing with grief, whether it was this or that. I mean, and she would just get on the floor playing with a baby, and just you saw that she lived that out, and she's one of those people where I always think back to, what an example. What an example of just, again, someone who's so in love with Jesus that just comes out in every area of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you do this, this deacon thing, well, this is, again, he's referring to deacons, as Paul, as he writes to his son Timothy. You gain an excellent standing. Now, basically what that means is you gain influence. People are going to look at you, and they're going to listen to you.
Right.
And so I began thinking about some of those people in my life. And one of them is now with the Lord. And here's his gravestone. I did find that. It was in my church in California. And thank you. His name is Hubert. He had an interesting nickname. Which was an offensive nickname, and yet he bore it so well, people never noted that. But his nickname was Honky.
Did he get that in his childhood?
He got that in his childhood somewhere. When I asked him once, where did you get that?
I think of the bad nicknames I call my kids. I'm like, wait a minute.
But he carried that through life. But talk about a man of influence. This guy served, you know, we had a rule that you could serve 3 years and then you had to be out at least 2 before you could become part of the church council again, right? And so he would do that, and finally he came, you know, he got to be in his 70s, and he said, no. When it came to him and asked if he'd be willing to serve again, have his name put in the pot. And he said, no. He said, I'm too busy right now. Well, what he was busy was, you know, and I wish, I couldn't find a picture of him. I wish I could. Because he rode around, this is in Chino, California, a town of about 100,000 people, pretty closely impacted, a lot of new developments, but a lot of old part to the city. And he would ride around on this old beat-up bike. There's somebody who had some means, he didn't have to do that, but he had this old beat-up bike. He had a big old cowboy hat on. And he'd ride his bike throughout the city, and any time he saw anybody who needed anything, he would stop. Anybody who would, he was known throughout the entire area,
right.
as they'd refer to him as Honky, you know, which is quite a surprise. But anyway, this man had such influence in the church. Now, I was the third pastor of that church, and I heard the stories. And then I got to know him. And in fact, he was the chairman of the church council when I came there as pastor. And I knew that anything new that was going to be proposed, I would call Honky. Mm-hmm. And I would say, can I buy you lunch? And we'd sit and have lunch, and I would run it by him. Because I knew if he wasn't for it, it wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
he had that kind of powerful
influence in the church.
Right, right. And, you know, and thankfully, there were times he'd say, yeah, so I can get behind that. Or, you know, a couple times, no. He said, I don't see that in this world, this society right now, that we're going to spend money on that. And so, but those who have served well gain an excellent standing. People will listen to them. Now, you know, that's interesting. Never the gain of somebody. I mean, that's not the goal of somebody with a serving heart.
The story of, like, Honky is such a good example where it's like he had gained the standing, but he wasn't trying to have power.
Right.
It wasn't about that at all.
Right. And that's the good news. It's really good news that you can gain an excellent standing. That you, representing the heart of Jesus for his church and the world, can be someone who holds the church to its desires. And you just don't, you know, I personally think churches today in the United States, many of them are focusing on the wrong things. You can be somebody who can be influenced toward what do we got to be and do as a church. And you know, Honky is one of those. He was just a precious person. I got to do his funeral. I was having heart problems. One day he dropped dead of a heart attack while he's riding his bike around looking for people in need.
He lived it till the last moment.
So that's the first thing. That's good news. Good news. You gain an excellent standing. It's worth serving for that. And the second part of the good news is you receive great assurance in their faith in Jesus Christ. Now, think this means that there's somebody who have a confidence and a boldness about their life because if you're trying to meet needs in the name of Jesus, you're going to see God meet those needs.
Yeah, a testimony. Like, I feel like getting to be here at CLI, like, I grade the action papers right now, and it's just extra paper after extra paper, you just see how God is like showing up, and it's just like there, you're just so overwhelmed that doubts are completely like, no, you can't have them. What I've seen God do, it's like it's incredible, and it's such a testimony of what. And I love seeing that with the students, like taking these courses and just being engaged to gain so much more insurance.
Right. Yeah, and again, person is now dead, but Bill Zondervan, part of the Zondervan Publishing House family, was a member of my church.
Known around here.
Yes. Anyway, he was part of our missions team that I mentioned earlier, and we had this crazy year where every year we would do a service where we challenge people to give beyond what they give regularly into the church for the general fund budget. To give a special amount and for the missions of the church locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. And we had one crazy year, and I asked a friend to preach to. I knew was pretty dynamic, and he was one of our pastor of one of our daughter churches, and man, did he preach. And our pledges for that next year came in as triple what they were the year before. And so I'm sitting as a man of not great faith in our meeting and say, I'm not so sure we can budget that much money and expect it all to come in. I think it was a flash in the pan kind of thing. And Bill just said, oh, wait a minute. He said, you know, this is where faith comes in. These people have said it. He says, and if we make the commitment, if we step out boldly and make the commitment to support these missions and these missionaries, God will supply. And anyway, he won the day. And I remember that meeting incredibly because it was that bold. Now, I've gotten a lot bolder as I've gotten older because I've seen, like you say, God showing up. God showing up. And when the first, in California, when the first recommendation of relocating the church came up, I thought, oh, no. No. We projected it would take 3 years, took 6.5, projected a certain number of millions that it was going to take, and it took double that. And, I remember saying, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I don't know if this could really happen. And you always know the guy was still living, but I won't show you his picture. But he was chairman of our building committee, and he took me out for lunch one day, and he says, you know, at that time in our community, 60% of the community was unchurched. And he said, it's going to take bold steps to reach them. And God is giving us the people. He's bringing them. We've got to take the steps. Anyway, he won the day. There's a big building in Southern California as a result of it. And in fact, they're adding on to it because they have, jeepers. Yeah, well, but they've developed three congregations. They have a Chinese congregation, they have a Korean congregation, and an English-speaking congregation. So they are expanding that building, and I'd say, glad I'm not part of that right now, but that's part of my life. Right. But it's
a needed step when that...
Right, and it's boldness. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the guy who was the chairman of the building committee when we were there for the relocation, for a short time, he's now retired. He's been retired for quite a while, but he's moved. But he was the chairman of the building committee for that, for the new expansion as well.
Wow.
So it's, man, get it. If you serve well.
Right. That's standing in that assurance and boldness.
Yeah, right. But you will, you know, God's going to do something, and you know it and believe it. But.
Yeah, let's stop there, right?
Yeah, there's bad news too. I am a lover of history. This is a picture of a sniper in the Civil War in the United States. And now I put his picture there because that's when a new tactic was developed for snipers. Now, when snipers were out there, these were the really sharpshooters, right? These were the people who had proven themselves with those primitive rifles, be able to shoot a long way and shoot accurately. But they weren't shooting at the general soldier. Mm. They were shooting at the officers. In fact, back then, you know, officers would often dress down. They wouldn't.
Right, they didn't want to look like officers.
Right, because they knew that these people are gunning for them. Well, one of the things I realized in ministry is that who's the enemy shooting at? Now, generally speaking, the enemy will be at work everywhere he can. But he has a real pointed interest in bringing down leaders,
right,
and people of boldness and people of excellent standing. And interestingly, you know, I entered ministry in 1979. Yeah, I'm that old. And I'll tell you what I learned about spiritual warfare. I read C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters. Excellent book. You're reading Ephesians 6, 10 through 18, which is the armor of God. And in seminary, I learned nothing. There was never a course on spiritual warfare. Not one.
Right, and what a huge thing that you need to be equipped on.
Especially if you're going to be a leader in the church. Now again, in CLI there's a whole course on spiritual warfare. I encourage you to take it. But you've got to know that if you are going to be a leader in the church, you are going to be dealing with spiritual warfare at an increased upper level. If you're dealing in a ministry, mm-hmm. That is equipping people around the world for more effective ministry. You're a leader. You're going to be more effective or more attacked than just the Christian who's, barely surviving, no influence. One person who's been very instructive for me in this is the movie George Patton. Interesting. When I watched this movie, there's one scene in which Patton is put in charge of the Third Army. This is during World War II. And he is fighting his tanks against Erwin Rommel, the most effective German general that there was. And they're in this incredible battle with these two armies facing each other, and Patton's army is winning. Mm-hmm. And he says out loud, don't know if he ever said it, but the movie says it. He says, Rommel, you blankety blank blank blank, said, I read your book. In other words, knew his tactics, mm-hmm. knew what he was going to do and what was likely to do, and prepared the counterattack. Mm-hmm. Now, when I think of spiritual warfare, I think of Patton and saying, yeah, we've got to know. Now, right. We're going to quickly run through some stuff just to give you an idea of what this means. First of all, you've got to know who he is. And there are names for him. Here's Ezekiel 28, that passage there. And many believe this is a reference to Satan. Look at what it says there. You know, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, in the garden of God. Every precious stone adorned you, etc., etc., etc. That this is a reference. This is a reference to the enemy, to our enemy. He was beautiful. He was in Eden, the garden of God, tempting Eve, who tempted Adam, who created what we call the fall. So that's something of who he is. Here's another one. This is that passage from Isaiah. You were anointed as a guardian cherub, for so I ordained you. You were on the holy mount of God. You walked among the fiery stones, for you were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till wickedness was found in you. Through your widespread trade, you were filled with violence and you sinned, so I drove you in disgrace from the mount of God. I expelled you, guardian cherub, from among the fiery stones. Your heart became proud on account of your beauty, and you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. So I threw you to the earth, made a spectacle of you before kings. Ooh, that's something of who he is. And then this last one from Isaiah. How you have fallen from heaven, morning star, son of the dawn, you have been cast down to earth. You who once laid low the nations, you said in your heart, I will ascend to the heavens. I'll raise my throne above the stars of God. I'll sit enthroned on the Mount of Assembly, on the utmost heights of Mount Zaphon. I will ascend above the clouds of the heavens. I'll make myself like the Most High. But you are brought down to the realm of the dead, to the depths of the pit. So, you know, these are Old Testament passages where they had a very limited idea of who the enemy was. But he's somebody of power. Mm-hmm. He's somebody of beauty. And those passages say, where is he at work? On the earth, where we live. And so we got to be aware of who he is. Some other passages. Revelation 12. War broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back, but he wasn't strong enough. They lost their place in heaven. And he was hurled down. Hurled down where? He's the one who leads the whole world astray, to the earth, and his angels with him. Again. And now, just some other names. What are some names? Prince of this world. Prince of the power of the air. God of this age. Murderer and liar. The tempter. Roaring lion.
I always am so struck by the name of him being the father of lies. You know, it's mm-hmm. like when you see how lies are a foundation to most ways that astray happens. You know, if you start lying about money or you start being two-faced or double talk, all these things, that seed of the lying being mm-hmm. right there. And yeah, it's just,
I don't even know where I found this poem, but the devil was fairly voted out, and of course the devil's gone. But simple folk would like to know who carries his business on. And, don't believe in evil, Lord. So, why are Christians falling? Well, that's who we're against. And so we've got to be thinking about spiritual warfare.
Right. Are you ready for this battle? Right. Yeah, and it goes back to what you said. It's like, do you know the tactics he's going to do, and have you equipped yourself mm-hmm. to handle that?
And, you know, the primary passage about that is the armor of God, Ephesians chapter 6. And, you know, here's a picture of the various parts. Belt of truth, like you say. Mm-hmm. Anything based on falsehood, lies.
Right. Oh, God.
Shoes of the gospel of peace, that we've got to be ready to go with the good news, the helmet of salvation protects our mind, the way we think, to know that we're saved. Shield of faith can put out all the fiery darts of the evil one. Breastplate of righteousness. The right living keeps us away from the attack. So, it's challenging stuff. And like I say, that in the course of spiritual warfare, I look at this stuff in far more depth. But know that if you are a deacon and you're trying to make a change that's going to grow the Church of Jesus and be more representative of Him on this earth, you're going to need to put on
suit up.
Armor of God. Suit up, that's a good way to put it. Now, a variety of ways of doing that, but there are a variety of ways of doing that. At one point in my spiritual walk, my devotional life, I would each day consciously say, especially during very challenging times where I felt the attack, I would say, I'm putting on the helmet, I'm putting on the belt of truth today, I'm putting on the breastplate of righteousness, I'm equipping my feet with the gospel of peace, I'm ready to go. A variety of other ways. But we're going to look at implications of this in the next section and what this would mean for you as somebody who's going to be facing this in your life and ministry as a leader. Not something to be scared of, because...
That's right. We're not in the ministry of fear.
Right. And He who is in us is greater than He who is in the world.
Amen.
So, see you next time.